Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. This is John Baker and my colleague, what's his name? He's never even here anymore.
Alan Dobrinsky.
Alan. Okay, now Stone Payton. Stone Payton is not here today, but Alan is filling in for as our host. Second host with the most. How you doing, Alan?
I'll be happy to. I am doing great today. I was just in Detroit yesterday.
Michigan.
Yeah, that's where my family is.
Yeah.
And it was a 13-hour drive. Me,
what?
My wife, my daughter, and a dog.
13 hours?
It's a 12-hour drive, and then, you know, you add the stops.
Yeah, see, I go to Detroit, through Detroit to go to Lake Huron all the time up in Canada. And it doesn't take 13 hours to get to Detroit unless you're going really slowly.
We were going 75 miles an hour.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It sure does.
What part of Detroit?
It's a suburb called Oak Park.
Oh, yeah. That's where my mom lives now.
That's where my mom lives.
Fantastic. We got to get together.
That's
go up there on holidays, Christmas or
had
something.
I had no idea. You know, everywhere you go, you meet people from New York. Everybody's
yeah.
from New York.
Yeah.
I never meet people from Detroit.
There you go.
So that's
they just moved there. My sister works at a place called Roper. I don't know if
yeah.
you've ever heard of Roper, the Roper School. It's a
have.
Private school up there. And then my mom decided she was going to move from Washington, D.C., and move from D.C. and had a choice to either come to Atlanta or Detroit.
I'm not sure that I would agree with her decision to move to Detroit. But okay, you know, who am I? Somebody has to live up there so that we can live down here.
That's right. That's right. Well, I don't know. And she has like 7 grandkids down here, and she has 1 up there. I'm like, Mom, it's all good. It's cool. You know, you go wherever you want to go, and she loves it. She loves it up there. But
very
she's
strange.
From Canada, so she likes the cold.
Yeah, very. That's different.
Yeah.
People don't usually go to live. You know, retire in Detroit.
No, but that's what she did. She retired. She goes to Detroit.
Yeah, that's
I thought, well,
all right. Well,
you had a good
power
trip.
To her. I did. We had a bat mitzvah.
Oh, there
my
you go.
My niece's bat mitzvah, and we played whirly ball.
Nice.
You know what whirly ball is?
You know, I don't.
Whirly ball, you remember the old-fashioned bumper cars where we used
yes.
to go to the carnival and ride the bumper
I did.
Cars?
Yes.
All right, well, they've decided that bumper cars alone is not that exciting. So now they have this whole stadium with two different rinks, I guess you call them, with bumper cars.
Yeah.
But the bumper cars, you have a net and a ball, and there's two goals. And so there's two teams, and you drive these bumper cars, and you slam into each other trying to get the ball.
You know what that sounds like? It sounds like redneck polo.
Well, funny thing is they got that up north.
Yeah, well, yeah, there you go. So I don't know what you'd call it. Detroit polo, I guess.
Detroit polo.
Because they got cars. That makes sense for Detroit, right?
Yeah, and they call it whirly ball.
Whirly
I don't
ball.
Know why they call it whirly ball.
All right. Well, that's awesome. Well, I'd love to play it because bumper cars I dig. That's a fun thing.
Yeah, and it is a lot
You had a good
fun.
Time, didn't you?
We did. We had yeah. a really good time.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Well, we're going to get started with today in our actual show. We do actually have a show today, which we're excited about. Biz Rocket is a radio show where we like to work with and talk to executives and business owners, getting insights and understanding of what they've accomplished, experiences that they've had, as well as challenges that they've had. And today we're excited to have Carlos Noche on board with Visualize. And I actually had Carlos, had an opportunity to hear Carlos speak at a Kettering event. And he did a great job. And I went up, right up to him afterwards. I said, you got to be on our radio show. Because he has this business that helps people on the sales side and also kind of marketing and kind of come together and values-based selling and all that good stuff. So, Carlos, welcome in.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you. So, tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, professionally, I've been a sales professional for 20 years, and I've created sales organizations and teams in different areas, and I had the opportunity of running a worldwide organization for a multinational company, and that was a ton of fun. And like all sales professionals, you get sales training along the way. And a couple of years ago, or actually 3 years ago, I decided to team up with, as a partner at Visualize, and where we represent the value selling framework. And we work with organizations, both big and small, and we work with their sales organizations in really driving revenue growth for them.
And tell us some more about this value-based selling, because you did the whole thing there in the workshop at Kettering, which was great. Tell us a little bit more about that.
It's a lot easier when it's visual.
Hence the name, right?
So, hey, look, at the end of the day, there's a ton of different sales programs out there. And value selling was created by a gentleman named Lloyd Sappington about 20 years ago. Here's this mathematician working at Xerox and IBM. And he became a VP of sales at a small company, and he wanted a framework or a formula to help him run sales.
Yeah.
So he comes up with this four-part formula, which he calls value selling, and he uses that successfully, and then he goes off, he goes, hey, you know what, I'm going to go work with other organizations and help training them. So it's a simple, I say the word formula, which always freaks people out, but once I explain it, they go, all right, I got it.
Sales guys don't like that whole thing, right?
The word formula, like, what? And it's a... at the end of the day, it broke a deal down or an opportunity into four parts. And if you can evaluate whether you're strong or weak on any one of the four parts, do something about the ones you're weak on to improve your odds of winning,
yep.
or come to the realization that, hey, look, it's time to walk away and go work a deal you can win.
Right. So will you have to charge me to get those four parts, or can we share that with our audience?
No, not no worries. The main part we call a vision match. It's a vision match that's differentiated. And basically what that is that, look, does our solution solve their particular problems and a collection of those problems to an overriding business issue or objective for the organization? The reason we say it's differentiated is because, hey, look, it's got to be different than the other players that you're competing against, right? What differentiates you? That's part A.
Right.
Second part of it is value. We both talk about business and personal value. But at the end of the day, what value is what you get. So, I heard it in the class, and I always take stuff from my students is, hey, value is what you get, price is what you pay, right? So what's in it? What are the results? What's going to happen in solving these problems to my organization, right? Am I going to save money? I'm going to make money. Power is the third part. And like in any, sales cycle, you always talk about power. We want to talk about who can say yes, who can say no, identify them, and then again, go back and have a differentiated vision match with each one of them. And then the last part is plan. Hey, at the end of the day, when we're trying to convince someone to make a buying decision, right, we go through this sales cycle, if you will, how are they, are they convinced that it can really do what you say it's going to do? And what a plan does is just outline the steps before closure and after closure of what we're going to do. What are the proof points that we're going to follow? Once we close, what's going to happen? Our implementation team is going to get together. Are we going to have a handoff meeting? Are we going to have executive meetings every quarter or every 6 months to get back together with each other to see how we're progressing and how we're doing against achieving that goal that we started out with?
Gotcha. So following those four steps, that's kind of what the premise of what your business comes into, right?
You got it.
So when you're dealing with sales organizations and with different types of salespeople, you've heard the term, salespeople are born, they're not made. How do you, if training is trying to make somebody a better salesperson, if they're born that way, do you agree with that statement?
I hear that all the time. And, let's face it, sales as a profession gets a bad rap.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I ask people, hey, visualize a sales rep, and the first thing I get back is a used car salesman.
Right.
Right? It is
a profession. See a sack of
soup. It is a profession, though, right? And just like doctors and lawyers continually invest in their profession to get better, sales professionals need to continually invest. The one thing I hear, hey, Carlos, I've been a rep for 10, 20, 30, 40 years. You know, I got it. Well, hey, look, this coming weekend, we got this little thing in Atlanta called the Masters.
Little golf tournament.
Little golf tournament.
Small,
right?
Little, yeah.
And Phil and the gang are going to show up, and they've been golfing for 10, 20, 30 years, right? Now, did they practice for the event? Did they work on their swing for the event? Or did they just simply say, hey, look, I've been doing this for a long time. I'm just going to show up and, you know, go hit the ball.
Right.
Right? So whether you're a sales professional, a CMO, a CEO, at the end of the day, the ones that get better are the ones that are constantly working on ways to improve their technique. So what we do is we work on sales performance with these folks, and we do it in a way that it's simple, very implementable, and it drives results.
So how's it different? There's tons of sales trainings. You know, in my business, I've been through all sorts of sales training stuff too. How's this any different? What does this do for an organization or sales force?
Well, first off, at the you know, I talk about this simple formula, right? At the end of the day, I want to have a conversation with my reps about what's going on in a deal, and I use the framework to lay over it. Versus a lot of these processes are, hey, fill out these forms.
Right.
And I don't know about you, but I've been to a lot of sales kickoffs, and with the best rep of the year goes up on stage, and I have not once heard them say, you know, guys, I filled out more forms than any of you.
Right. I'm better at paperwork than you are.
Right. At the end of the day, they have interactions with their customers. So how do you maximize those interactions to get what you need and also what the customer needs at the end of the day, right? So how do we differentiate yourself? We really focus on that customer interaction, right? What are you going to have to uncover? How are you going to differentiate yourself? What's the process you're going to follow to get there? Customers are going to have their own process. They always do. Right? How are you going to blend into it? Mm. And if you can't follow their process, or, you know, if you're going to blindly, let's say, follow their process to come in second place, hey, let's not waste our time.
Right. Now, Carlos, that sounds almost more like a consultant than a trainer. It almost sounds like you're going in and you're working with people on particular, like, items they're dealing with, like, right now. Like, they've got a case or a business opportunity out there, and they're working that. You're going in and talking to them about that particular situation and giving them coaching along the way, or am I hearing that differently?
Well, let's, you know, we've practiced what we preach, right? So I always laugh when people go, hey, Carlos, we selected you because you were one of the few vendors that actually followed their own sales process. Back to your comment. Hey, I don't know about you, but I hate being sold, right? I want someone to come in and talk about what's important to me, not how great their product and service is and how great of a rep they are, right?
Right.
So it is about getting to know better your client, right? What's going on in their business, what other projects are going, and if you want to call it consultative, yeah, it is, right? The best reps are the ones you say, oh, he's got these great relationships, right? And you'll laugh. He goes, Carlos, in your former, you didn't have a relationship. Well, let's face it. Like, John, I really like you, but it doesn't mean I'm going to hand over $1 million to you.
Right.
At the end of the day, if I'm working for a large organization, I got to justify why I'm doing business with you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that means the conversation needs to be about that. A lot of times, reps make the mistake of talking about, they get so wrapped around about how good their product or service is, and they just talk about that. Hey, and then they expect the customer or the prospect to make that translation for them. Hey, he's selling this great thing. I got this problem. The two to two come together, it works. Yep. That might work 5-10% of the time if you're lucky. And in a down economy where it's really tough, it's even less than that. So how do we improve our odds of winning? Well, we got to talk about what are the challenges that client is actually having and how we can relate to and resolve some of those.
Some of those issues and what they're dealing with at that time.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what are the groups that you're working with best? Is there certain industries or organizations that you tend to kind of be in the middle of your strike zone?
Great question. So me and the partners, a lot of us came from a technology background. So we got a lot of technology type companies like Citrix Online and Motorola and Avaya. But, you know, you'd be amazed is the widespread of clientele that's used value selling over the last 20 years, from marquee jets and net jets selling jet services to I have a client that sells medical waste. to hospitals. Right. Well, they don't sell the medical waste. I should take that.
I was going to say.
They sell the process of taking the medical waste away from the hospitals. And at first you go, well, Carlos, what the heck do you know about hospitals? And better yet, what do you know about regulated medical waste?
Right.
And, you know, working with the client, asking them questions about, hey, what are the problems they solve? How do they relate to the key issues going on in hospitals today? You know, we were able to take the process and really map it to that client. And after the very first workshop, the one thing that stood out to me is so many people came up to me, Carlos, you really know our industry inside and out and what we're going through day in and day out. And I laughed at them. I go, hey, guys, I did this process called value selling. And I asked a lot of questions. And you taught me.
So there, you understood more about their business than they knew themselves because you listened.
You do. And you get it up by asking questions and uncovering. You get to learn a lot about their business. If you have that creative, and you know, you want to. It's not just about listening. It's about being interested, right? Being interested about this client's business and what's going on.
What's an example of an organization that you really enjoyed learning more about? A group of salespeople that you really remember.
Well, you know, like I've sold technology for most of my life, and you know, it's, you know, you get a bunch of guys together, they put some software together, and it solves a particular issue. Now, maybe it's just because of the way I grew up, but you know, I love working with manufacturers and people that produce something.
Yeah.
And you know, again, that's an area where you can get really excited about what you produce. But in working with manufacturers and what they produce, and getting to understand, that's, you talked about making that connection to marketing.
Right.
You know, we call it bridging the gap. A lot of times, we spend millions on marketing, and it falls on you know, how great our product is, what benefits it has, all its advantages. At the end of the day, you know, when it gets to sales, they have to go now make that translation to what are the problems it solves. So we try to shorten that gap. And in working with a product or a manufacturer, it's always great to kind of hear about their product and what they're doing. But no offense, I've done a ton of technology in my life, and you know, it's probably where my, you know, sweet spot is.
Yeah. So what has been the size of a group that seems to work well? I mean, obviously you're working with a sales force for the most part, but what's a typical good group to work with from a size standpoint?
You know, there's a... the fun aspect of it, and there's a financial aspect of it. Look, every sales cycle, I say, takes about the same amount of work. So the larger the organization, so working with some clients that have thousands of reps worldwide.
Yep.
And the fact that we have a network of partners allows us to do it in multiple languages across the globe, right? So those are the most, let's say, fun as far as, hey, a client you can work with for years and really start moving the needle with them, right? But, you know, hey, a fun organization, when you got 100 to 200 reps, you get to turn the ship a lot quicker.
Yeah.
And that's usually, you know, when you talk about fun aspect, that those are the fun organizations to work with.
Is most of your training done face-to-face with these guys, or with obviously telecommunications, everything else that's available? Is it video conferencing and phone calls, or how does the training actually happen?
So great question. So it used to be we would have a 3.5-day face-to-face workshop. And we've continued to invest in our product. And what we do now is we do an online course that takes about 2 to 3 hours, and we test. So, hey, if you don't pass, you don't get to come to the class. So you got to pay attention. Right. And that really just teaches you the concepts. What is value selling? And then we do a 2-day certification workshop face-to-face where we do, you know, basically three key things. We have group discussions. We have team competition, right? So I break them up into teams, and sales reps are a little competitive, and they compete against concepts. I'm coming up with some of the, let's say, the best questions they ask around our product. And then the last part, we practice, right? We practice against a case study that's specific to their industry, yeah, specific to the type of customers they sell to. So it's a combination of both. And as part of an overall implementation, you know, we do everything from phone calls to face-to-face meetings. And a lot of clients today, I was like, hey, can we just do it all over the web or
right
in a meeting? They right go, hey, we could. But let's face it, do you sell your clients just over the phone every day? And the majority of them, no, we need to go meet them face-to-face. Well, if you want the most impact, you know, the reason we meet face-to-face is to create that connection. Then afterwards, a lot of times I'll have individual reps call me about individual deals. Or what we also do is opportunity reviews with frontline managers.
Right.
And that we could do over the phone. Now we've got a level set, and we can work on opportunities to get them to closure.
So you've established the kind of the baseline, and then after that, follow up, and maybe one-on-one type of work can be done on the phone a little bit more effectively.
You got it.
So do you travel a lot? I mean, you all over the place all the time?
I am. You know, I was in India in February, and, you know, Delta's my second home here in Atlanta.
Yeah.
You know, and I was moving from California here to Atlanta, and one of the things that, you know, my wife now wanted to move to Florida. And I was like, hey, you know, that's great. My parents are down there. Your parents are down there. But there's no way I'm going to be stuck through Atlanta every time I got to go somewhere.
That's right. You got to go through Atlanta anyway, so you might as well live here.
You got it.
Yeah. So you must have some interesting travel stories. I can't imagine that, you know, the man with the bag on the airlines, you haven't seen some crazy stuff.
You know, it's funny. Is that you had someone on your show recently, and they talked about meeting people on a plane.
That's right.
I laugh about it because I've literally have met CEOs that I've had dinner with just sitting across them in first class and talking.
Yeah.
Now, look, sometimes I'm the guy with a baseball hat that just doesn't want to talk because I'm just drained from one of these workshops.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you just take a little time to relax, you get to meet some great people on planes. So, I don't know, plane stories, I've met some interesting people over the years. And I now when I go to the airport, instead of worried about getting through security and what's going to happen, is my plane delayed, I look at it, hey, it's an opportunity, man. I'm going to go meet somebody.
Yeah.
And who knows?
Yeah, and the random networking. That's what the show is.
That was a random networker. He just specifically goes on airplanes to network.
Yeah, he flew to Japan just for the miles and just gets on airplanes just to network. So that's how he does sales. That's how he prospects.
Now just to be clear, I'm actually flying somewhere. Not just for miles.
There's a purpose. There's a purpose, right? Yeah. Well, I mean, crazy story. And I talked to him afterwards. It was really interesting. He wants to do kind of a show, like a real life show where he's challenged to go meet somebody. He's like, go meet that guy in the car at the stop line, you know, or go meet this guy in the elevator. I said, hey, you know, you find a network, it'll work. So, what are the biggest mistakes that you see out there? I mean, you training guys in sales all the time. What are the things that people are just doing poorly that's costing them a sale?
You know, I think, a couple of things. I think organizations are, you know, today, most people that are working got, you know, they got two jobs, it seems like, right? We've trimmed down so much that sales professionals are out there running and gunning. And one of the common mistakes they do is, hey, they get just so enamored with their product and service that they just kind of show up and throw up all over people.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's a little too visual. But, you know, they show
it's
up.
It's radio. You got to do that, right?
You're right.
It's
fine.
And they just, you know, hey, here's all the features and benefits, and here's how great we are, right? And it's a big, it's one of the first mistakes we usually see a lot out there. Now, the second part of it, you go, well, Carlos, hey, we don't do that. Right, we really talk about all the benefits and how great we are. Awesome, that's great. So the second thing, and I was at it recently here in Atlanta at this CIO roundtable, and at the end of it, my favorite question was one of the vendors asked, "Is hey, how do I get to you?"
Right.
And what they said, "Hey, look, when you come to me, do your research, and come to me about a real problem or critical business issue that I'm dealing with, not a hangnail."
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you are going to go through the process of figuring out what problems you solve, hey, let's ratchet that up. I got a little story I do in the workshop. That's just kind of get people to kind of start thinking about it. We all own a home, hopefully. And you get there and you got a front doorway. You go, hey, this is nice, but I like one of those new nice iron doors.
Yeah, the double ones.
Yeah. You know what? And I like this nice wood floor beginning. I like that slate coming in. That'd be even better. And that kitchen's great, but I like one of those new shiny Viking stoves. And by the way, while I'm at it, I should have one of those fancy home theaters with surround sound. And you go, why don't you do all these things, right? And it's just a matter of, hey, we have limited capital or money to get everything we really want. And businesses are no different, right? They got tons of problems, but they only have limited funding to solve certain ones. So which ones do they focus on? Well, back to the house. Your roof starts leaking. You know, do you sit there and go, hey, do I fix the leaky roof or home theater system? Mm-hmm. Leaky roof. Surround sound. You know, you got to decide, right? And you pick the leaky roof because it affects your entire assets. These executives that are making these decisions have critical business issues or things that they're measured on. For example, driving revenue. Yeah. How do you relate to that, right? not just a small problem that they're dealing with, but how do you relate to the things that are critical for them to running their business? So back to a common mistake. A lot of times we don't make that connection. We expect the client to make it for us.
So the research, you know, go in with educating yourself as to what those issues are going to be, and then be able to listen to what they've got to say, and then have a solution or at least something to bite on to start the whole process. Yeah.
Yep. And then, hey, one thing is, look, I'm lazy. Look, the process works for itself. In other words, what I say is, look, you got some clients today. Take them out to lunch. Instead of just buying them lunch and say how good they look, how about you ask them some questions? Hey, when we first did business, what were some of the critical issues that you were dealing with, and how have we done so far, right? How have you measured success? How has your management seen this project go? We do that with our clients. And by the way, you get one little nugget. The next client you talk to, you go, hey, you know what? For a lot of our clients, we've been able to grow sales by 20 to 30%. You know, how are you going to measure success? And they'll give you a nugget. And a thing will snowball, because now you're really having conversations about the problems you solve and the impact that you have on them and how people measure that success.
Give me an example of either a rep or a company that you were working with that you felt like you made the biggest impact on, or a big impact on.
There's a company out of Chicago, and it's a small organization. And in talking to their worldwide VP of sales, we were having dinner because we had put them up for this award. And one of the things there was a couple of people, and we asked them, hey, you know, what did Visualizer Value Selling do for you? And he says, it feeds our families. Like, oh, come on, tell us what's going on. Well, hey, before we had a great technology, and we were spread out looking at anybody that could use it. And what we did after Value Selling is we focused on certain markets, and we really refined our value proposition for that market. Within 6 months, we doubled our deal size. Within 9 months, we tripled our deal size. And at that time, he had gone 7 quarters straight hitting his number.
Wow. So they had the product. They knew what they could do. They knew their value. They knew what they could provide, which was really number one, right? What can you give? What can you provide to somebody? But they didn't know how to get it out there. They didn't know how to organize it and then get it out there and actually bring the sales to the floor.
Yeah. Most companies know their solution. In fact, they spend a ton of time. They hire a new rep. What do? Put them in product training.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now he goes out on the field, he's got to talk to somebody. All they can talk about is, hey, let me tell you about my product. Well, what you got to get to is, what are the problems that you solve with it? You know, what are the critical business issues that you can address in solving those problems? We work with organizations around their sales kickoffs events, one of my favorite times of the year. And one of the things we work on is, what are the presentations that we're going to do at sales kickoff? And you'll sooner or later, you get the guy comes, hey, I want to talk about the market and how big it is and how great it is and how we can, you know, we're 5'9" reliable and we're scalable. And you're like, oh, all the bulls, I got it. So what happened? You've rolled this out before, you know, what happened? Right? The CIO you're selling this to does not go home at night and go, honey, I only got 4 9s today. Well, they talk about if the system's down is how long was it down and, you know, how can you get it back up and running quickly?
Right.
Right. So you got to talk the way, when you talk and you talk about the features and benefits, they're only a feature benefit if they see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way you're going to get there is to really have a conversation about their challenges in their business.
Going back to those four key parts of the value selling, the power piece, how do you know who has the power? I mean, sometimes it's in a title, but sometimes it's really not.
Correct. And you know, that's why I always say it's anybody can say yes and anyone can say no, right? And sometimes you get someone that's very influential, doesn't have the title, but can say no to your project and sink you. And one of the things we talk about is triangulation. In other words, you ask the same question of multiple people in the organization. Mm-hmm. So, John, who besides yourself will be making this decision?
Right.
And sometimes, by the way, you're going to get the, it's me. I don't mean to sound bad, but sales, you know, customers lie worse than salespeople. And again, I don't mean it in a bad way, but let's face it. You never go into a sales campaign and the customer flat out tells you, you're doing an awesome job. You're in third place.
Right.
Right? So, you know, asking the same questions, who's beside yourself so you can make a decision, asking that at multiple people, and then after that, so once you do make a decision, what's your process? I'm trying to uncover those you know, those those little bombs that happen during a sales cycle, right? Hey, I made the decision, but now it's got to go to procurement. I made the decision, but now I got to go to my CIO to get approval.
Right.
So one thing reps flat out forget to do is they don't ask. You don't ask, you don't get, right? Say, well, I might offend them. Well, hey, it's not about being liked. It's about professional respect. Mm-hmm. You got to do your job just like they got to do their job. And you'll find out if you do ask some tough questions, if they do get stuck, that's a tell. That tells you, you know, where you're really at in the sales cycle.
Mm-hmm. And what about the final piece, which is the plan? Is that something that you guys do a lot of work with the companies on, or is that something that you really see them handling on their own?
So when we go to do opportunity reviews, the plan, I got to tell you, is the first step. People are like, oh, I'm going to take a shortcut. You know, I talk to them. I think I got a vision match. I think I know who does power. And I go, okay, did you put it in writing? Because a plan is basically a mutual plan in writing that you share with your customer. Well, no. Look, first off, it's a great test for yourself. If you can't put this in writing and articulate it in a way to share with a customer that you feel comfortable with, then you probably don't have what you think you have.
Right. All right?
Second of all, let's say you do give it to them and you get no feedback. Boom. Hey, you caused a reaction. Where are you really in this deal? And then lastly, you know, a plan is not that complicated, right? In other words, I'm not trying to create this big statement of work, or it could be a one pager or two pagers. What I want on there is, hey, John, in talking to you, you said you really wanted to increase your revenues by 30% this year. And some of the key problems you were having were A, B, and C. You were also looking to solve them by doing X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And by doing so, you thought you can get one more deal per rep per year, improve your discounting by 3 points, and whatever the third one is. I'm not that quick on a radio.
Right.
Okay? Next step would be for you guys to have a team huddle on X date. Page two, here's when we initially met. Here's when we did the need discovery meeting. Here's where we're going to do proposal review. Here's my pre-proposal review. Here's where you're going to sign off. Here's where we're going to start the installation stage. Here's where we're going to be completed by the end of the year. So let's face it, deal to deal, how often is that going to dramatically change?
Yeah.
So once you create it once, you can use it over and over again, and it really keeps you on track. I just did a sales kickoff, and what I had is certain teams come up.
Mm-hmm.
And one lady says, I've been working with this account for 2 years. In fact, originally I lost the deal, and I just stayed in contact with them over time. And after the training, I go, hey, what's been the impact? They go, it's actually been costing us three more than we thought. You know, she's had a little anxiety question. Hey, in this economy where you're really pressed to reducing staff, you know, you're paying three more than you thought it was going to be. You know, we're a $500,000 savings for you. I mean, is that enough savings for you to get the team together again and reevaluate this thing?
Mm-hmm.
And so that got her some traction, but the plan is really what drove it through, because at the end of the day, she gave him the plan, and he goes, you know what, this is perfect. And they used it as the steps and process that they followed to get the deal done.
Yeah, yeah. The implementation, the actual, what's the step-by-step process going to be, a review of everything that you're going to do is just, is critical.
Yeah, and you know what, guys, again, I don't mean to make this radio show about me being lazy, but no rep works one deal at a time.
Yeah.
And I have a real hard time keeping track of 10, 20 opportunities I'm working on.
Yep.
Right? I dust off the deal that I was working on a month ago, and what I'm dusting off is my plan. Hey, last time we talked, this is why you told me it was important. Here's why you told me you had to get this done. Here's the time frames we have. We've slipped. What happened?
Yeah, yeah. So it lets you remember everything that was going on, something that didn't quite go as perfectly planned as you expected.
You
right?
got it.
Yeah. So being in this business for a while, you got to have some good stories. What's the funniest story you've got out there from a salesperson or doing this business?
Well, you know, look, I'm not going to pick on anyone, so I'll just pick on myself. So I was living in Chicago, and I was working with a rep that was out of Detroit, actually, Birmingham. And we were running and gun. Remember I said, hey, sometimes we're just so busy, and you're just so focused on doing that you don't even take a break to think about it. So I show up, and we were going to go to a client, and I showed up in Cleveland, and I showed up at the airport, and I walked through the terminal, and I'm out by the ticket counter, and I said, hey, I'm by the ticket counter. He goes, hey, I'm by the ticket counter. Well, I'm by the Delta ticket counter. Dude, I'm by the ticket counter. It's only like 20 feet long. Where the heck are you? I go, look, I'm in Cleveland. I'm right here by the door. Cleveland? The meeting is in Cincinnati. I literally walked up to the counter, got a ticket, hopped back on the plane, and went home. The stewardess on the airplane goes, he's the same crew. She goes, wow, that was a short meeting.
That was a quick yes or no. I'm not sure exactly which one you got. So I guess the concept there is make sure you book the right, you know, city, you know, not just the time, but you got to be in the right place.
Well, you know, hey, part of it is, you know, like I said, today everyone's busy. And we spend so much time doing that we don't take a breath to find out what are we doing and why we're doing it.
Right.
And the reason we're busy is because we end up doing the same event over and over and over again because we're missing the mark.
Mm-hmm.
And we're missing the mark because we're not having a conversation to start out with, hey, what's critical to you? What are the problems that you're having? How do we address them? What's the value in addressing them? And you end up just doing the same things over and over and over again. Plus, you got to do it 10 times more times to kind of get that win rate in there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, great stuff, Carlos. This is a great organization, neat stuff. I think a lot of companies could benefit from it. One of the things that we like to do in kind of wrapping up the show is get your pearl of wisdom. So for our listeners, what might you tell them? What might you suggest that you've seen really help people that are either executive roles or business owners out there to be more successful and get more out of life?
You know, hey, look, at the end of the day, it's we all have a lot on our plates, right? We all got tons of stuff we're working on. And just like we're working through this process of identifying, hey, what are the critical things we need to achieve this year? We're all about growth through goals. So my biggest, I guess, little pearl of wisdom is, hey, look, take a step back. Find out what's really critical for you. Not the next 5 years or 10 years. Heck, it could just be the next 6 to 12 months, right? Outline that. Write it down, if you will. You know, I'm a big guy about putting my goals, and if I want something, I have a picture of it, and I stick it up on the wall. And it's amazing how your mind finds a way to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't focus on something, then you're just really reacting.
Right.
And you don't feel in control. And that's where a lot of professionals feel like today. They're out of control. They're just, you know, just holding on by their, you know, their nails onto something. Hey, pick the things you really want to do, decide what they are, and go for it.
Sage advice. Good stuff. Well, Carlos, we appreciate your time. If somebody wanted to get in contact with you or with Visualize, what would be the best way to do that?
Sure. So they could, can I give my phone number? Is that fair?
Whatever, yeah.
So phone number is a great place to reach me. I'm at area code 678-464-1238. Our website is visualize.com. And my email is real easy. It's carlos@visualize.com.
All right. Can't be easier than that. Well, Carlos, thanks a lot. And we appreciate having you on the show and giving us this this insight. Until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. We'll be right back.